Well, hello there, all of you out on Taylor Mall. You are in for a fright because it's everybody's favorite Friday night time. What time is it?
7:01.
My gosh, that sounds really familiar. Isn't that the time some kind of show is on here on Blaze?
I think it's the Review Squared. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it the Review Squared?
I think you're right. And this week it's a little different because there's only two of us here in the studio. It's just myself, Kirsten Dorman.
And John Brown. Gideon and Ethan are not here tonight.
They're off doing spooky things that are mostly unbeknown to us. I'm not sure what Evan is up to, but I know Gideon is on a trip somewhere.
Wait, Ethan.
Ethan, oh my gosh.
Kirsten.
Did I say Ethan?
I think you said Evan.
Oh my gosh. See, this is what being in the Bill Austin does to you sometimes. It's a little bit like the Twilight Zone, where you are supposed to talk, right? And talk for a while, but then all your brain cells just evaporate.
Yeah, it's been a long week, but at least it's Friday.
Yes. And we do have quite the show for you guys. It's going to be a little more laid back this week.
Mm-hmm.
John and I thought we would just kiki and kick back the week before Halloween.
Yes, that is true. Let me talk about that. That is crazy.
Yes.
How it is almost Halloween. I feel like October just started.
Oh,
and it's already
more.
The 22nd.
Honestly, a lot of people have said this before me, but I totally agree. October has flown by,
mm-hmm.
like blinked by, but September felt like it took years.
Exactly.
It felt like September lasted forever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not ready for like pumpkin patches to be over. Halloween stuff to be over.
I haven't even gotten to drink any apple cider, which is disappointing to me.
Because if you know me, you know I love it. We are simply almost in November, and I'm like, no way.
I did have my first PSL of the season yesterday, though.
How was it?
It was delicious. I went down to Press Coffee down on
First
down here downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't paid or anything to say this, but the staff there is just wonderful. They're so nice and friendly. And they made me a PSL with caramel in it because they were like, listen,
ooh, sounds good.
It's going to fill out the body of the drink. You mm-hmm. should have it this way. And I said, you know what? You work here. I'm going to trust what you have to say. And it was delicious. So.
Yeah, no. Actually, I think it's on 2nd and Van Buren, I believe.
Is it?
I
just trusted what you had to say because I'm really directionally challenged.
Because I park right next to there. So to any viewers who, they actually just opened a new location downtown. So to any viewers who want to go get some coffee while you're downtown, 2nd and Van Buren, I believe, is where they are located. It's right next to the Arizona Central building.
Yes, it was 10 out of 10 experience, really. And now it's time to get excited about Halloween and all things spooky. I am doing the show today dressed as Bella Swan because I'm going to a COVID-safe get-together later where we're all asked to come in costume, and I bought teeth for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're the retractable ones.
Yeah.
And I can't decide if it was worth the money or not.
No, I think it will be worth the money. Definitely.
And John, you said you don't have any ideas for what you want your costume to be.
No, I don't, because usually I haven't dressed up for Halloween in forever, and thinking of ideas is just the hardest thing. And I honestly don't think I'm alone in thinking of ideas. It's just hard, like, every single year.
Right.
So,
I struggle this year a little bit, and this is not my only costume. I'm also going, like we were talking about before, as a female version of the Joker, because I have a friend who's going as Harley Quinn,
mm-hmm.
and originally we were going to go as Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, but you'd be shocked, I think, at the lack of Poison Ivy costume equipment that there is out there,
mm-hmm.
and I straight up do not have the money to put together a whole cosplay on my own, and so I went into Spirit Halloween and said, whatever's next to the Harley Quinn costume, I'm gonna go for. And that's how we ended up with me dressing up as essentially a walking red flag this year.
Hey, it's going to work out, Kristen.
I think so. I really want to make a TikTok with that sound where it's the person overlaid over this like laughing music.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot like Joker.
I know what you're talking
from
about.
From the movie Joker.
You know what? Let's just make it the best Halloween. It is.
I think so. You've got to lean into it. That's camp, ladies and gentlemen, and themtlemen, I think is how I would say that. Ladies and themtlemen, perhaps.
Yes, or they, them, she, her, he, him, his.
Yeah, just pick your pronouns.
Yeah.
Out of the bunch. You can pick more than one if you so choose. We're still talking to you.
Yes.
And speaking of talking to you, I think we should get into our first, a little bit of a story.
Yes.
Today.
Do you want me to lead off, Kristen?
Or... You certainly can. Okay. I've been talking for a while, so.
Yes, but we have some actual news to get into.
We do. This is still a news show. This is not just John and Kristen hour anymore.
Right. This is still a developing story. We are going to be talking about the 911 call from Rust, from the movie. Sorry. Words are hard. From Rust, the movie set, crew members say, "We need help," in quotation marks. A CNN affiliate has obtained the 911 call from the set of the movie Rust, where the film director of photography Helena Hutchins died and director Joel Souza was injured after actor Alec Baldwin discharged a prop firearm on the set of the movie on Thursday. That is according to Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office. In the call obtained by the CNN affiliate KOAT, a crew member explains to the operator that help is needed for two people that have been accidentally shot on the set at the Bonanza Creek Ranch. The incident happened around 1:50 p.m. local time on Thursday, the investigator said. The Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office told CNN that the investigation remains open and active and no charges have been filed. And detectives are investigating how and what type of projectile was discharged. This is from a statement from a law enforcement said. And this reporting is coming from CNN as well. This is... When I first saw this story, I saw this trending on Twitter, and I thought, wow, how could this go so wrong? I say that in my head because there are obviously so many stunt people on the set. There are so many professional actors who know what they're doing. There's so many crime movies, especially with Alec Baldwin, since he's an experienced actor. Mm-hmm. And especially the safety protocols, especially going with COVID. I know this is not related to COVID in any sense, but still with the safety protocols at all. And the workers, days before, they were protesting the long hours and the long commutes of this movie set. So I think it was interesting that also came out. And according to NPR, Alec Baldwin is cooperating with the police. And expressing shock and sadness, end quote, at the incident that has shaken Hollywood. And he says he is cooperating with the police investigation into the shooting that happened on that New Mexico movie set. And I'm going to read you Baldwin's Twitter statement on Friday. End quote, "There are no words to convey my shock and sadness regarding the tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, a wife, mother, and deeply admired colleague of ours. I'm fully operating with the police investigation to address how this tragedy occurred, and I am in touch with her husband, offering my support to him and his family," Baldwin added. End quote. And end quote, "My heart is broken for her husband, their son, and all who know and loved Helena." End quote. So going after his quote in his Twitter statement, and police are investigating the incident, I think this is just, it's tragic to say the least, and I think it's a really bad tragic accident, and I think it'll play a really important lesson in the future that there needs to be more safety protocols, no matter how experienced you are on a movie set, because this woman's life was taken away for what could have been checked and double checked. And obviously if the workers were protesting on set and walking off set days before this happened, obviously there's an issue. And according to the NPR article, Alec Baldwin was seen distraught and in tears speaking on the phone outside the sheriff's office in Santa Fe. That is according to the Santa Fe New Mexican. So, again, this is such a developing story that it may even change in the hour within our show. So, I'm curious, Kirsten, what do you think of all of this?
I have never heard of something like this happening before. I remember being really shocked, honestly, just like, no way. Because all I can think, right, is imagine showing up to work. You think it's going to be a normal day, no matter who you are in this scenario. And something like this just happening and changing really the course of your life. Mm-hmm. Because everybody involved, Alec Baldwin's life, here I am messing up everybody's name today. But his life is never going to be the same. You don't walk away from an accident like this just completely okay mentally, emotionally. And same goes for both of the victims' families. Even the, I think you said it was the director, right, who was just injured.
Mm-hmm.
Even her life and her family are probably very greatly affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
And for the individual who died as a result of this accident, I can't even imagine what their family must be going through and what their loved ones must be going through right now. I don't know. I think on a broader sense, a reminder of how fragile life really is. Because, wow, I mean, it can really all be over so quickly and so unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always tough when situations like this happen because, and I think it just, I can see where there wasn't an issue, or obviously there's still going to be issues, but if we have these workers who are walking off and they're frustrated by the conditions surrounding this, what was a low-budget film, that are including complaints about the long hours, long commutes, and collecting their paychecks. And that's according to the three people familiar with the matter who were not authorized to comment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting this from the Los Angeles Times. I think if we didn't have this before, this incident of people walking off due to the unsafe concerns, we could see this as such a tragic incident that should have never happened. It should have never happened, period. But when this comes out, and to see that your employees of your movie are walking off due to horrible conditions of what been reported, I think maybe there needs to be a greater investigation into what happened. Maybe there wasn't safety protocols that were put into place. Because if you have people who are walking off, then maybe it's time to reevaluate your movie and your budget, because that movie is just not Alec Baldwin and the actors and actresses on set. It is everyone who's making a team effort to get this movie to screens in America and around the world.
Right.
So I think this needs, again, New Mexico authorities are looking into this. So I think it speaks to maybe this is more than just a tragic accident. It's a tragic accident, but since this came out with people walking off and protesting, there needs to be a greater look into this. And obviously this is developing, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is kind of a blunt question, but do you think there was any malicious intent behind what happened potentially?
No, I don't think there's malicious intent. I think there was a lack of care from the executives on the movie set and people who have probably had really good experience in movie casting before and being on movie sets. I mean, obviously, I believe this is a tragic accident. But again, what I was just explaining, you know, if this was done with malicious intent, then that is a whole different story.
Yeah. But
I think it explains how much we need to value everyone that goes into a movie set, and that goes into the production
and workers and the casting in general.
And workers in general, just not even in terms of movie sets, just workers in general, and valuing everyone, because this is such a tragic accident that happened. And
honestly, I think something like this could happen in any industry.
Exactly.
Where, you know, safety protocols may not be, they may be in place, but they not may not be being followed properly enough, or being employees might not be being trained consistently enough because there's these other conflicts that are happening, which really, I mean, with the whole Hollywood situation and these workers who are, you know, kind of behind the scenes people, they're very vital to these productions, first of all. But second of all, when these people ask the ones hiring them and the ones in charge of their working conditions for essentially basic decency and say, hey, could we maybe have a meal break once in a while and things like that, and then they're refused those things, they're not going to show up to work and give it their all.
Right.
And this isn't me trying to excuse what happened, because I still think it's inexcusable to have any kind of malpractice or unpreparedness when it comes to things that could potentially, like, really, really hurt or kill someone. And I hope I'm being clear in what I'm saying here, but...
Yeah, you are.
You know, when you alienate people from their labor so much, and to the degree that major mistakes like this are made when they were very avoidable, it seems, as with the information we have now, it seems that way to me. You need to sit back and reevaluate and make some changes ASAP. Maybe give your workers basic human decency.
Yeah, and, I agree.
Yeah, and there shouldn't even be the threat of something like this happening for you to do that, in my opinion. I think every single person who works deserves humane and decent conditions. Bare minimum, ground floor.
Agree. And I'd like to thank the Los Angeles Times, the CNN, and other dedicated stations and local stations as well, who are doing such great reporting on this top story. Kirsten, do we have a break in hand, or are we going to throw it off to your story?
I think it's a good idea for us to take just a quick break, just a small little smidget of a break, just to give our listeners a little breath between things, because we are about to talk about another really heavy story. And honestly, I think we could all use a little breather.
Yes. And with that, the Review Squared will be right back after this quick message.
And you know where you can also get all the news, or at least all the news that you'll want to really, really dive into? It's the Review Squared. And here we are back on Blaze Radio, on blazeradioonline.com. We're still in the Bill Austin. We're still going.
We're still here.
We are still here. And I'm still Kirsten Dorman.
And I'm still John Brown.
And we are still so happy that you've continued to listen. So next up, we have a kind of update on our on a story we've been keeping track of, and honestly, we as a country have kind of been keeping track of for the past over a month now, month and a half or so. And yeah, honestly, just in kind of the spirit of October, I thought we could have a little bit of a discussion about the fact that, you know, sometimes the truth really is scarier than anything we could come up with in our imaginations. And we've known that to be true time and time again as we've gone through the different cases I've brought you all throughout my time on the panel here on the Review Squared. Sometimes our obsession with true crime stories and mysteries can seriously mislead us. We can see this in the way that the very real stories of a person's tragic murder or sudden disappearance are sensationalized or taken apart or analyzed, and then they're tossed aside in favor of newer, fresher wounds to pick at. And sometimes the way we tell these stories and dive into the lives of those involved, or even those who aren't involved at all, can feel more like analyzing fictional characters than what it sometimes really is, which is invading the privacy of very real people. It's something we've discussed here on the Review Squared during my segment more than once, which is treating those involved in these cases with respect, treating them as real people. And for example, one particularly concerning trend that I've noticed crop up online in wake of the Gabby Petito case has been specifically when Gabby still hadn't been found and Brian had just disappeared and we weren't sure of his whereabouts, was when these people on specifically TikTok would get onto their profiles and post content of themselves saying things that along the lines of that they were a psychic and that they had felt or sensed or seen where Gabby was or where Brian was and what Brian's feelings and motivations were. There's one creator in particular whose username and /name I will not be platforming here on the Review Squared, but I'm sure if you've heard anything about this, you've heard their name or seen their content, where they've claimed that they didn't think Brian had any malintent and that he was probably just in the heat of the moment and had hurt Gabby and was scared and all these things. And really, at the end of the day, what that amounts to, in my view, is speculating on a murder that you did not know had taken place, for sure, because at the time we didn't know, unfortunately, what had happened to Gabby, but also exploiting a tragedy that a very real family and her very real friends and other loved ones were going through at the time for views on TikTok. And whether or not these people are sincere in their belief that they have psychic powers, it's been long discussed in the true crime community. There's this very famous clip of a reporter going kind of undercover with a psychic and saying, you know, you analyze this picture of a little girl who you said was deceased somewhere and had been horribly abused leading up to her death, but that was a childhood photo of myself. How do you explain that? And the woman across from her was just dumbfounded and didn't know what to say. And there's been a lot of debate on, you know, whether psychics that do these things are a good thing and they're doing a service to grieving families and can provide them some level of peace, or whether these people are inadvertently or purposefully kind of conning these families and conning these people and giving them false hope. How ethical is that, to give people this false sense of hope?
You know, that's such a good question, and it's such a deep meaning question. And there were so many TikToks about the Gabby Petito case and so many people specifically on TikTok speculating so many things. And if I was, if I were Gabby Petito's parents, you know, I'd be outraged if my kid was murdered and platformed on national news, and talked about all over TikTok. You know, I would be mad too. I would be grieving, obviously, but they're talking about my kid on a national platform and on a social media platform.
If she's a character in a show, which is what really weirds me out a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Where they have these theories about what they would have felt or said or did, not knowing these people at all, not having really any evidence to back this stuff up, right? Like, it's so strange.
And I think, I think that, you know, just if you were to insinuate stuff about this case or to make up like your own assumptions, and people on TikTok playing that they know everything, that they're future detectives and this, that, you know, it's saddening if you exploit this case for all the wrong reasons. And you have to feel for Gabby Petito's family. Her case has been broadcasted since September, late August, early September. You know, I really feel for them. Not only because they have to grieve for their child, but they have to deal with all the national coverage of this, and you don't really know until it happens to you.
Right.
And especially with yesterday, with what happened with them finding Brian Laundrie's bones and remains in Florida.
Right. And, you know, part of this case is we've gotten a lot of confirmation of certain things that have been talked about on TikTok. Like, we've had people or sources confirm that, for instance, the last known sightings of Gabby on August 27th in this restaurant in Wyoming with Brian, where it was reported by, among other people, a couple from Louisiana saying that the two of them were fighting and it was Brian storming in and out of the restaurant and things like that. So those sightings have been confirmed. That was them there, according to the FBI. But other things, like something to do with the activity on, I think it was Gabby's or Brian's Spotify accounts.
Yeah.
Those things have never, to my knowledge, been confirmed. And some people talk about them as if they're still fact.
Yeah.
I remember just here in our newsroom for Blaze, I was talking with a few people, a few of our members, about the case, because on the TV in the newsroom was the breaking news yesterday of the human remains being discovered in the park in Florida, on the trail in Florida, in the Florida wilderness. And at the time, they weren't even confirmed to be Brian's. And so a few of our members that I was chatting with, one of them said, well, you know, I heard that he's still been following people on Pinterest and unfollowing them through his account. I've heard rumors that his Spotify account and his email are still active and sending things out and playing things and following people. And, you know, I think it's very easy to get caught up in feeling like you're playing detective a little bit and feeling like you're figuring things out that nobody else has noticed. And while I always will encourage our listeners and everybody around me and beyond, really, to keep an eye out for your fellow man and keep a sharp eye, there is a line. And I think going through the activity on an account on a high-profile case that could have been hacked, frankly. Somebody could have just figured out his password and gone in to mess with people because they know that there are certain individuals who are looking for this stuff to see whether or not they can find evidence, quote-unquote. It's very easy to fall into the trap of digging yourself into this hole of, I don't want to say obsession, but fixation on certain cases like this.
Yeah, and let me tell you, misinformation is deadly, especially here, COVID-19, just in general, misinformation is deadly, and the amount of harm people do by spreading misinformation, whether it be on purpose or accidentally, it's damaging. Misinformation is such a big problem, and I think this case, it brings up how much attention the media needs. Let me just preface this. The media needs to pay more attention to people of color and indigenous people going missing.
Absolutely.
Because there was so much coverage going on for the Gabby Petito case. And now I'm not saying that there shouldn't have been. Obviously, it's an important case that needs to be highlighted. But I think people of color and indigenous people's cases need to be highlighted just as much as Gabby Petito's was. Because I don't know if you're familiar with Jelani Day.
We posted about him on our Twitter account for Hypothetically Speaking, actually. If you go, we have a thread up on our Twitter of information about that case. And if you know anything on that Twitter, hypoth_speaking, there is contact information if you know or even think you might know. Like, you might have seen something and thought to yourself, I'm sure that it doesn't mean anything. Still call it in if you were in the area. because really anything could help. Mm-hmm. And like John said, his family deserves answers too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he went missing around the same time as Gabby, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
And his case, thankfully, has gotten some more coverage due to this conversation around what's been referred to a lot as missing white woman syndrome.
Yep.
Where yeah. it refers to our fixation on these missing white women. And if you look at some of the bigger cases in the true crime kind of realm, I suppose, or the community that we talk about Gabby Petito, but we also talk about the case of Chris Watts, mm-hmm. at the center of which was his wife and two daughters,
yeah.
and his one unborn child, mm-hmm. His wife being a pretty white lady. You talk about, I can't remember, Scott and Lacey Peterson.
Yeah.
Those two. Jodi Arias, who wasn't missing, but was a white woman at the center of a crime investigation as well. And our fixation on these people as if they're characters, I think, says a lot about us as far as, yes, as far as the news goes, but as journalists, you and I both know, we don't tend to, as the news media, which I don't love that phrase because it always smacks to me of people who gesture vaguely at news outlets and say, it's all your fault for everything going wrong.
Yes, but let me preface this. I'm sorry. Did I say news media?
No,
I meant the media.
Right.
The media is a good term.
Right. I think that's more of a personal pet peeve. That's why I hate saying it. But it is true that, you know, it's not likely that something will run if the people putting it out don't think anyone will read or watch it or listen to it. And in that way, I think it's very important to be mindful of what you're consuming. I had a conversation with a YouTuber called Khadija Mumbo about this recently for another podcast that I'm doing for the State Press. And we talked a lot about the algorithm on these platforms, right? You're shown what you interact with. You're shown what you tell the algorithm you want to see.
Right.
It's not this all-knowing system that guides you. As Mumbo said, you have to do the work yourself in a lot of cases.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And that starts, like, not only on our behalf as journalists to cover these stories, but on your behalf as the audience to consume them and spread them. Because at the end of the day, what motivates these news outlets and organizations, just like any other business, is what? Money. Mm-hmm. Profit. And if those kinds of stories, and I hate even saying this, but if those kinds of stories don't generate profit or any kind of benefit, these outlets will not put them out. Mm-hmm. And that's such an issue because, like you said, the lack of coverage is so damaging and deadly at some times. And yeah. they deserve that coverage. They mm-hmm. deserve that attention. The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and, you know, other Indigenous people, women and girls and non-binary and two-spirit people in the Indigenous communities, it's an issue that we've even talked about here on the show. Mm-hmm. And yet all we continue to see is people vaguely gesturing at it and saying, yeah, that's a problem. You know, we can only educate audiences so much about these things being out there. We can only do so much to get them to care.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, as journalists, we can only do so much. And it really breaks my heart to say that. Mm-hmm. But it's the truth. There is a responsibility that lies in you as the listener, as the viewer, and as the reader.
Yeah. Misinformation is deadly. Support local journalism.
Yes.
And according to the Society of Professional Journalists, there's a lot of harm going on. Let's try to keep that at a minimal for journalists and I think let's respect the victims' families and for the victims themselves as well.
Right. And the small update that I can give you here is not only that Gabby's body was found and identified as her own back on, I think, September 18th, it was very soon after she was reported missing. But as you mentioned, Brian's body was found earlier this week, or his remains, rather. And not only was he found, but an autopsy did recently come out. And according to the FBI, like, statement that was released, they used dental records to identify him, which can clue us in a little bit as to what the state of his remains may have been.
Yeah.
You mentioned them being skeletal, which I haven't seen any, like, super concrete confirmation of that, but it is likely, considering that it's likely that he was very decomposed, considering that they did have to use dental records to identify him.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the family lawyer, Steve Bertolino, for the Laundry family, he told the New York Post, and the only reason I'm using this is because it's a direct quote, but he told them that no manner or cause of death was determined and that the remains were sent to an anthropologist for further evaluation. So another important thing to note is that his remains were found in a pretty swampy area. And that particular area, according to one report, had been recently underwater and is home to alligators and wild pigs. It's known to be home to those animals.
Oh, wow.
So those are important things to consider as we move forward in this investigation, as well as there's also been reports of Brian having had a notebook with the items that were among the items found near his remains, which last I had seen, the notebook hadn't been opened, but I don't expect that to last. I'm sure investigators will want to know, just as I'm sure you do, and just as I know I do, I would like to know what is in that notebook and whether there is any kind of confession or reason, what possible reason there could be for all of this that he could give.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on what could be in the notebook? I think that's kind of the sticking point for a lot of people now.
I don't know. It's just so sad that...
Yeah, I don't even know if it matters, honestly.
Do you think it matters?
Not really, in my opinion. It matters only if it can give Gabby's loved ones closure.
Yeah.
And that's where my thought really ends on that, because at the end of the day, I don't think there's any reason that he could have given... that would have made any of this A, make sense, or B, justified in any way.
Right.
Yeah. But on that very somber note.
You want to take another quick break, Kirsten?
I think we'll take another quick break. We really are, like, we may be missing a good chunk of the cast here today, but we're still hitting you with that 1-2 punch pretty thoroughly, I think.
Yes, agreed.
So I think we will hit you with another break, but we'll see you right back here very soon on Blaze Radio, on Blaze Radio Online, for more of the Review Squared. Well, well, well. Look who's still listening, or who's tuning in for the first time. Whichever camp you fall in, we are so happy that you are listening. And what are you listening to, you may ask?
The Review Squared.
Wow, wow, wow. With myself, Kirsten Dorman, and my wonderful co-host,
John Brown.
It is just us once again this evening, but we are still kicking it here in the Bill Austin, just like we do every Friday at 7 p.m. And we're going to wrap up our last 15-ish, more like 10-ish minutes here in the studio with one last story from John.
So this is very interesting, especially if you have TikTok. And this is coming straight from BuzzFeed, because I was like, wow, this came on my For You page. So BuzzFeed spoke to 17-year-old Grace Brumfield, who made the TikTok. She's a junior at an Alabama high school. And this TikTok was basically adults shaming this 17-year-old girl for her homecoming dress on Facebook, and it's starting a conversation about boomer hate, quote, boomer hate on the platform, according to BuzzFeed.
Boomer hate? Is that what they're calling it?
Boomer hate.
My gosh. Exactly. Okay.
This is all coming from BuzzFeed that her school recently held their homecoming dance. Grace went with her boyfriend wearing her dress, and she got a lot of compliments about it, and then it turned south. So this is from BuzzFeed, end quote. Unfortunately, Grace's pleasant homecoming experience was brought to a halt after Zach's mom shared the couple's pics in a Facebook group called Sunflowers and Daisies. End quote. My boyfriend's mom started telling me how the pictures had somewhere around 32,000 likes. She was talking about all the nice comments, and then she said, and of course there are the negative ones as well. My heart kind of immediately sank because I felt so confident about my appearance and attire that night, and I didn't want that confidence I had to be, in a way, stone for me. And she said, I have been picked on my entire life. My freshman year, I moved schools because it got so bad. And after Grace read the comments, she was taken aback by how mean some people were. She said, in quote, it shocked me because most of them were from women, and they were all mothers and grandmothers. The only question I had was why. I didn't see anything wrong with my photos, so why were there negative comments? End quote. And as a way of coping, Grace decided to turn this situation into a joke on TikTok. This is according to BuzzFeed still. The Facebook post has since been removed by the group admin, but here there are some awful comments that Grace screenshotted and shared in her viral video. That she does have screenshots of that. I will not be reading it on air.
I'm reading some of them, and wow, are they nasty.
Yes.
So you're telling me these are coming from adult people, huh?
Exactly.
Wow.
And I'm going to read her one message that she has to share after going through all of this. In quote, this is from Grace. I think that what any man or woman decides to put on their body is their choice. As long as no one is being harmed, it is nobody's business. I dress the way I dress because I know what looks good on my body and what makes me confident in my own skin. Nobody else has the right to tell someone to cover it more because it's distracting. Older men and women need to be taught to control themselves. End quote.
Wow. And one thing that I do want to also point out is one commenter also said, quote, don't dress like you are asking for it. What?
You know.
Huh?
Just.
This is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
The dress itself, by the way, it loosely resembles, as this article points out, and I think it's a pretty dress.
It loosely
resembles a dress that Princess Diana wore.
Exactly.
And really, it doesn't deviate too far from the normal fare for homecoming dresses, at least not that I've seen.
Right.
Genuinely, I'm just in awe at how, I think sometimes we think we've seen it all with how awful people can be on the internet, and then things like this pop up, and it's like, wow.
And I feel bad for her. She was bullied since freshman, not since freshman year. She had to move schools her freshman year. And adults, too. This is just so frustrating. And this brings me back to that 15-year-old boy in Tennessee who was speaking to the school board about COVID-19 mask mandates because his grandmother had passed away, and the adults were laughing at him and telling him to shut up. That is ridiculous.
Wow.
It is so ridiculous.
I'll never forget watching that clip and just being so, like, are you not embarrassed? Are you not mortified at your own behavior when you see it played back for you like that as the adults in the room? Because you should be. You should be incredibly embarrassed because I want to say it's childish behavior, but even a child would know better.
Exactly.
If you're raising that child correctly.
You know, exactly. And that boy was 15. She's 17.
Right.
It's
Which, by the way, shout out to all these adult people for admitting very openly that they looked at and immediately sexualized this child. Great job. You're really, really showing people what being classy is all about. Like, what? And, you know, somebody also pointed out that, you know, in the comments on the TikTok, parents are very concerned about bullying and yet seem completely fine with it when it's them in their middle age bullying minors on Facebook. Talk about punching down, and literally and figuratively.
And it's like not even people, maybe it's the majority of it is not people her own age. It's adult women and grandmothers.
And right. And I think there's something to be said about when you're someone who's raised as a woman and you're taught growing up that the way that men respond to your body and respond to what you're wearing or how you're acting or whatever it may be to, quote unquote, ask for it, as that one commenter put it. When you're taught from a young age like this, because I still consider 17 to be pretty young. When you're taught from that kind of age or even younger that you are responsible for people's reactions to your body and your clothing and the way that you look and act like that, that is setting children up to be abused and to accept abuse from people, because that's what it turns into. When you encourage them to take the blame for how other people react to completely innocent things that they do, you're encouraging them to accept abuse.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's been in my own personal experience, without getting like super personal here on the show. That's what I've seen to be true anecdotally. And I'm sure a lot of people out there would agree with me.
Yeah.
Please do not raise your children this way. Please don't. We need to be better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is how we end up with just bad things happening and bad things being allowed to go on happening when we blame victims or when we shame people and saying that they ought to be victims. How horrible is that? To wish on someone.
It's terrible.
Shame on everyone who posted under these pictures and told this girl that she looked this or that way and that she looked like whatever kind of insert adjective here, inappropriate, whatever you want to say. I'm so like, I think we put it in our show promo, like this show is rage inducing at times. And this is one of those times for me for sure. This is a subject that hits close to home for me, and you know, honestly, we need to be better. We need to do better. And that starts with how we raise kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they encounter situations that are difficult, they need the right tool set to respond. And thank goodness that this girl, what was her name? Grace.
Grace.
Thank goodness this girl, Grace, had the support system that she had. I saw in the same article, her boyfriend's mom and her boyfriend himself were sticking up for her and had her back on this. And I'm so grateful to know that she has a support system, because many, many girls don't. Many young mm-hmm. people in positions like this, these things don't make it to the internet. These mm-hmm. things don't get reported or recorded or anything like that. And you know, not every kid has the support system to back them up and say, no,
mm-hmm.
what you were doing was not wrong. It was very normal.
mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't feel ashamed for that. And you know, I doubt that Grace will ever come across this or listen to this, but if she ever did or if anyone in a similar position to her ever did, I want you to know that you should be able to live your life without fearing how other people are going to react to the way you look or how your body looks or whatever it may be. You deserve to live without constantly double checking in your mind what people's reaction to you will be and whether that reaction will put you in danger. Mm-hmm. When it comes to doing completely mundane things like wearing a dress that you honestly looked very pretty in to mm-hmm. homecoming. And that's really it. I'm going to get off of my soapbox now. Thank you, John.
No, I think it was, I liked everything you had to say, and I agree 100%. And with that note, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. Obviously, Gideon and Ethan could not be here, but they will be back next week. And Kirsten, I think this was a pretty good sum up of the stories that we had tonight. Obviously, there's a lot of developing stories happening, and that will continue. And remember to take care of yourselves, be healthy, stay safe, and I cannot believe it, but we are like halfway done through the semester.
I know.
A little more than halfway done.
It's crazy. And also, if you want to suggest Halloween costumes to John, because he still has not made up his mind,
suggest it
you
to me.
Should do so. You can find John on Twitter individually, but you can also find the show on Twitter. I believe we're review_squared, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And you can find me on Twitter at John S. Brown TV.
Definitely tweet at John. Let him know what he should be for Halloween.
Give me some Rex, everyone.
Please.
And with that, thank you for listening to the Review Squared on Blaze Radio and BlazeRadioOnline.com. For Kirsten Dorman, I'm John Brown.
And we'll see you next week, hopefully with the rest of our crew.
Yes.
Bye.
The song at the start of the episode is Dedicated to the Press by Betty Davis, and the music you hear is by Springtime.